राम राम। श्रीमद् भगवत गीता साधक संजीवनी चैप्टर 3 वर्स 42 एंड 43। इंद्रियाणि पराण्याहुर् इंद्रियेभ्यः परं मनः मनसस्तु परा बुद्धिर् यो बुद्धे परतस्तु स एवं बुद्धे परं बुद्ध्वा संस्तभ्यात्मानमात्मना जहि त्रुम महाबाहो कामरूपं दुरासदम्। It is said that the senses are superior to the gross body. Greater than the senses is the mind. Greater than the mind is the intellect. But greater than the intellect is desire. Thus, knowing that desire is beyond intellect, subduing the self by one's self. Destroy this, O mighty armed Arjun, the tough enemy in the form of desire, which is hard to conquer. Comment: Indriyani Paranyahu. Senses are superior to body or objects of senses. It means the senses know the objects, but objects do not know the senses. Senses live without objects, but without senses the existence of objects is not proved. Objects cannot illume senses, but senses illume objects. Senses remain the same, while objects go on changing. Objects come within the range of senses, while senses do not come within the range of objects. Eyes can perceive the physical body and objects, but the body and objects cannot perceive the senses. So senses are greater, more powerful, more subtle, and have a wider range of activity than objects and the physical body. Indriyebhya param manaha. Senses do not know the mind, while the mind knows the senses. Every sense knows only its own objects, but does not know the objects of other senses. Ears can perceive sound, but cannot perceive touch, form, taste, and smell. Similarly, tongue can only taste, nose can only smell, eyes can only see, and skin can only touch. But the mind knows the five senses and their objects. Therefore, the mind is superior, more powerful, more subtle, has a wider range of activity than the senses, and is their illuminator. Manasastu para buddhihi. The mind does not know the intellect, but the intellect knows the mind and senses. The intellect knows whether the mind is quiet or turbulent, and whether senses function properly or not. It means that the intellect knows the mind and its thoughts, as well as the senses and their objects. Therefore, the intellect is greater, more powerful, more subtle, and has a wider range of activity than the mind and its illuminator. Yah buddhe paratastu saha. The master of intellect is ego. Therefore, a person says, "My intellect." Intellect is an instrument and ego is the doer. The instrument depends on the doer. Desire resides in the insentient portion of ego. But it is because of identification of the self with the insentient body that desires seem to reside in the pure self. In fact, desire resides in ego. Because ego has the desire to enjoy pleasures and so becomes the enjoyer. The enjoyer, enjoyment, and the object to be enjoyed belong to the same class. Otherwise, the enjoyer cannot be attracted towards the object. But there is no desire in the self, which is the illuminator of the enjoyer, enjoyment and the object to be enjoyed. All the insentient objects such as the body, the mind, the senses, the intellect and the ego are fragments of nature. Beyond ego, there is the self, a fragment of God. The self is the base, the root, the cause, the inspirer of the body, senses, mind, intellect and ego, and is subtler, greater, stronger, wider than all of them, and is also their illuminator. There is pleasure or pain in the insentient nature of the embodied soul, while the sentient does not undergo any modifications, such as pleasure and pain. The self is the knower of any modification, but when it identifies itself with the insentient body, it has to undergo pleasure and pain. The sentient soul, by identifying itself with the insentient body, becomes the enjoyer. In the inert only, there is no enjoyership. The enjoyership remains in the ego, where there is identification of the soul with the body. The term asya, used in the 59th verse of the second chapter, denotes the enjoyer, while the term parama denotes God, unattached, universal soul. When a striver realizes parama, God or self, his taste or relish also turns away. Gita, chapter 2:59. A man has desire in order to derive pleasure or joy, while the self is naturally a heap of joy. Therefore, on God realization or self realization, desire totally perishes forever. A vital fact: the physical gross body is the object of senses. Senses are the external instruments, while the mind and intellect are the internal instruments. Senses are beyond the physical body, while the intellect is body and senses. Ego, which is the doer, is beyond intellect, and desire resides in the ego. The self is sentient, unaltered, and an embodiment of truth, consciousness and bliss consolidated. But when it identifies itself with the insentient body, etc., ego is born, and the self becomes the doer or agent. Thus the doer has two aspects, the insentient one and the sentient one. A man, embodied soul, because of the insentient aspect, is attracted towards the world. That is, the worldly desires are born, while because of the sentient aspect, is attracted towards God or the spiritual discipline. As the insentient aspect is perishable, so are the worldly desires, and the sentient aspect is eternal, so are the spiritual desires. The mundane desires are renounced, while the spiritual ones are satisfied. The mundane desires can appear but cannot exist, while the spiritual desires can be suppressed but they cannot perish, because the former are unreal while the latter are real. Therefore, an aspirant should neither hope for the fulfillment of mundane desires nor lose heart by thinking of the non-fulfillment of spiritual desires. In fact, the only desire of a man is to realize God, whose fragment he is. But by identifying himself with the body, he, by an error of judgment, forgets the real desire and hankers after worldly pleasures and prosperity. But the real never ceases to be. The desire for the real can never be destroyed. In a striver, two sorts of desires remain: one for God realization and the other for worldly pleasures. So there is a duel between the two. It is because of the duel that when a striver practices spiritual discipline, such as adoration, meditation, and good company. His spiritual desires are aroused, but at other times he hankers after worldly pleasures and prosperity. While having mundane desires, a striver cannot even resolve that he has to practice spiritual discipline. He cannot progress in the spiritual path so long as spiritual desire is not aroused. When he resolves that he has only to realize God, the dual ceases and only the keen spiritual desire remains, which enables him to realize God easily. So, for a striver, it is indispensable to root out this dual between mundane desires and the spiritual one. The self has an automatic attraction or inclination towards God, whose fragment it is. This attraction is known as devotion. When the self accepts its affinity for the world, that devotion is suppressed and desire springs. So long as there is desire, devotion is not aroused. Without devotion, desire is not killed. The insentient fragment hankers after sensual pleasures, while the sentient one is attracted towards God. Therefore, in fact, desire resides in the insentient fragment, but it is so because the two are identified. When the sentient self does not accept its affinity for the insentient, desire perishes. It means that as soon as the sentient self renounces its affinity with the insentient body, etc., ego, the identification of the self with the insentient, perishes, and consequently desire perishes. Desire abides in the insentient fragment of ego. The reason is that an enjoyer can be attracted towards objects of enjoyment of the world. The senses and intellect with which the world is seen only if these belong to the same class, because attraction is possible for the objects of the same class only. As eyes are attracted to beautiful color or form, so is the case with other senses. Intellect is attracted towards discrimination or thought, not to sound. If it is attracted, it is because of an association with senses. Similarly, the self has its identity with God, and so it is attracted towards God. This identity can be expressed only when the self totally renounces its affinity for the insentient matter. As soon as the identity is realized, devotion is aroused, in which there is total lack of matter, the unreal. The insentient fragment, causal body, is a very subtle fragment of the cosmic intelligence, which is an evolute of nature. Desire resides in the causal body. It is because of identification of self with the causal body. That desire seems to reside in the self. When there is no identification, man realizes the self, which is pure and uniform. In that case, desire perishes totally. Evam buddhehe param buddhva. In the previous verses, it has been explained, the senses are greater than the body, greater than the senses is the mind, and greater than the mind is the intellect. But now, in this verse, when the Lord declares that greater than the intellect is desire, he means to say that desire resides in ego, not in the self. Had it resided in the self, it might have never perished. It is born when the self accepts its affinity for the insentient body, etc. In fact, it resides in the insentient fragment but appears in the self. Therefore, knowing this desire, which is beyond intellect, a striver should eliminate it. Samstha bhyatmana atmanam. The method to slay this desire is to restrain the self by the self, to accept the real affinity of the self for the pure self or for God whose fragment it is. The same fact has been pointed out by the Lord in the 5th and 6th verses of the 6th chapter, where he declares, "One should raise oneself by one's self alone, and the self has been conquered by the self." The self is a fragment of God, while the body, senses, mind, and intellect are fragments of the world. When the self, having a disinclination for God, has an inclination to nature, the world, desires are born. Desires are born when there is privation, and a man, the self, feels it because of his affinity for the world. Because the world is unreal, has no existence. Gita 2:16. But like a mirage, it seems to exist. As soon as the affinity for the world is renounced, desires perish. Because the self has no deficiency, as the Lord declares, the real never suffers any deficiency. Gita 2:16. Even when a man has disinclination for God and assumes his affinity for the world, his real desire, need or hunger remains to realize God, whose fragment he is, the self. He wants to remain alive forever. He wants to possess all knowledge, and he wants to be happy forever. This is his desire to attain God, who is the embodiment of truth, consciousness and bliss. But it is because of his affinity for the world that by an error of judgment, he wants to satisfy his desire by enjoying worldly pleasures. But this desire can never be satisfied with worldly objects, so it will have to be discarded. He who has established his affinity for the world is also capable of renouncing it. So the Lord orders Arjun to slay this desire by disassociating himself from the world through his own efforts. This disassociation needs no practice, because practice is done with the help of the world, body, senses, mind and intellect. In fact, a man gets established in the self or realizes God by renouncing affinity for the world. A vital fact: when the self accepts its affinity for the world, it has a desire to enjoy worldly pleasures as well as to realize God. He, the self, by an error, wants to satisfy the need for God realization, whose truth, consciousness and bliss, by worldly materials. Therefore, both his desires remain unfulfilled. A man can know the world by disassociating himself from it, and the Lord by identifying himself with him, because he, the self, is different from the world, while he has identity with God. But he accepts his identity or affinity for the world in order to acquire worldly things, which is never possible. Similarly, he accepts that he is different from God, which is also not a reality. Spiritual desire is necessary in order to root out worldly desires. When spiritual desires grow up, mundane desires automatically perish. When mundane desires are rooted out, spiritual desire is satisfied. That is, God, who is ever attainable, is attained. God always pervades everywhere, but a man does not realize him because of his entanglement with worldly desires. Jahi satrum mahabaho kama rupam durasadam. The term mahabaho means one possessed of long and mighty arms, that is, a brave warrior. By addressing Arjun as Mahabaho, the Lord means that he is brave enough to slay the enemy in the form of desire. It is hard for a man to conquer this enemy so long as he has affinity for the world. This desire deviates even the wise from the performance of their duty by covering their discrimination, and so they have a downfall. Therefore, the Lord has said that it is hard to conquer. So a striver, instead of losing heart, should be aware of this enemy. Desires appear and disappear, whether they are fully satisfied or partly satisfied or not satisfied at all. While the self ever remains uniform and knows their appearance and disappearance, so he can easily renounce his affinity for them, which is merely assumed. Therefore, an aspirant should be afraid of desire. If he is determined to attain his aim, he can slay desire very easily. Everyone is independent, qualified, deserving, and able to realize God. But it is not so with desire, because these can never be satiated. The Lord has bestowed upon beings this human body so that they may attain Him, so they can easily renounce desires. But it is because of their attachment to the worldly persons and objects that it seems difficult to renounce easily. The Lord creates unfavorable circumstances so that man may be warned not to have desire for favorable circumstances. Otherwise, these will lead him to suffering. It is a rule that he who has a desire for worldly persons and objects cannot escape pain. The Lord declares, the pleasures that are born of contact with objects are only sources of pain. In Gita 5:22. The soul possesses infinite strength. It is because of the power derived from the soul that intellect, mind, and senses seem powerful. But it forgets its strength because of its affinity for the sentient and regards itself as subordinate to the intellect, mind, and senses. Therefore, it is necessary to know the self and recognize its power in order to kill the enemy in the form of desire. Desire is born out of affinity of the self for the insentient matter, and it resides in it but seems to reside in the self. If one does not accept affinity for the insentient, desire has no existence. Therefore, when the Lord urges Arjun to slay desire, he means to say that desire has no existence of its own. A desire appears and is automatically disappears. So, if you have no new desires, the old ones automatically disappear. A man becomes aware of wanting something in himself only when he regards worldly objects such as the body, etc., as I, my, and for me. But he wants to make up for the lack by worldly materials. So, he has desire to acquire these, but it is impossible to make up that lack by these materials, because he is imperishable while these are perishable. Thus, he by desiring transitory objects gains nothing but suffering. Therefore, by calling desire an enemy, the Lord urges Arjun to slay it. This desire can be easily eliminated through the discipline of action, because a desire following the discipline of action performs every major and minor act for the good of others, rather than to satiate its own desires. All his actions are performed for the welfare of others, without any selfish motive. All his resources are not his own, but have been acquired and are likely to be lost. So, he uses them for the welfare of the world by regarding these as for the world, without any selfish motive. Thus, He gets rid of desires easily and consequently attains his aim of God realization. Then nothing remains to be done, to be known, and to be acquired. Appendix. Here the Lord has mentioned senses, mind, intellect, but he has not mentioned ego. Ego is greater than the intellect. In the fourth verse of the seventh chapter, also the Lord has mentioned ego after intellect. Bhumi rapo nalo vayu kham mano buddhi revachah ahankara iti yam me. Therefore, here also the term sir should be interpreted as desire, which abides in ego. Unless and until the self is realized, desire abides in the ego. After self-realization, desire does not persist in ego. Param drishtva nivartate in Gita 2:59. Bliss abides in the self, but a man, by according reality and importance to non-self, wants to derive pleasure from it. As long as there is affinity for the non-self, desire persists. But when affinity for the non-self is renounced, then prema, real love, ensues. The desire is in the self, raso pyasya, Gita 2:59. Being in the self, it is an obstacle to self-realization. If it is not in the self, but is in the sense, mind, intellect, how is it an obstacle to self-realization by us? It is because of its abode in the self that the self feels happy and sad and becomes the doer and the enjoyer. In fact, the desire does not reside in the self, but it is merely an assumption, and therefore it can be wiped out. Therefore, desire is seated in the self only through assumption. A man assumes a thing which abides in ego to be abiding in the self. Ego is identified with the self and desire abides in that ego. Therefore, so long as ego persists, attraction, that is, desire which belongs to the same class to which ego belongs, persists. And when ego perishes, then attraction, true love, belonging to the class of the self, ensues. In desire, there is attraction for the world, while in true love, there is attraction for God. All the three worlds and endless universes are sense objects. Sense objects are in one region of senses, and senses are in one region of the mind. The mind is in one region of the intellect. The intellect is in one region of the ego. And the ego is in one region of the self. Therefore, the self is very huge, within which there are all the three worlds and endless universes. But a man, by assuming his affinity for the ego, a fragment of lower nature, feels himself very small, unipresent. End of chapter 3, verse 42 and 43 from Sadhak Sanjeevani by Swami Ram Sukhdas Ji.